This is Fred Lambert for a new episode of the Tech Podcast. And after 1 week hiatus, Seth is back live from Paris. How are you, Seth?
I'm good. I'm a little sick. I'm full of baguettes, but things are pretty good.
Nice. And if you wonder why he has his microphone at the eye level, as if he's like it's like a screen from a night tech device or something, that's because otherwise you guys would hear some breathing noises.
But I am a little sick, and it's not the best microphone, so we're doing what we can.
There was a bit of lag there. Okay. All right. So let's start with the news this week. It wasn't a big week for Tesla news, but we have a bunch of other stuff after the Tesla news with a lot of things are starting to come out, especially with the Frankfurt Motor Show coming next month, and a few other things too that were interesting. But starting with Tesla, as usual, first official battery supplier for Tesla's electric vehicles other than Panasonic has apparently been approved, at least according to a report from Bloomberg that Tesla came to an agreement with LG Chem. They will supply the Gigafactory 3 in Shanghai with 2170 cells for the Model 3. And apparently their agreement also taking into account the Model Y, which should come into production at Gigafactory 3 also. I'm not sure about the timing about the Model Y for Gigafactory 3, but the Model 3 is supposed to start by the end of the year. So that will be LG Chem by the end of the year. And then either next year or the year after that for the Model Y. It is not an exclusive agreement with LG Chem, because as Elon previously said, it would be probably like sourced from multiple suppliers, including Panasonic. So we all expected that Panasonic would be like the first deal that Tesla makes for Gigafactory 3, but it appears to be LG Chem. And it might be because they have a plant pretty close to Tesla's Gigafactory, just about 200 miles away west of Shanghai. Nanjing, I think it's pronounced.
Do we know if Panasonic even has a Chinese factory?
They do have Chinese factory. That's a good question. They do have some Chinese factory for sure. But as far as I know, they might just be for pouch cells. They might not be for cylindrical cell like Tesla uses. So that might also be a reason why. So that's a good point.
Yeah, and the 2170s are what they need for the Model 3. So it's not we're not even sure who makes those in China.
Yeah, well, LG will make them apparently. So they do use the same format, but it's not certain if they're going to be able to use the exact same chemistry, because we know that Tesla developed their own chemistry for the Model 3 cells. They did it in partnership with Panasonic. So I'm not sure if only Panasonic can produce those cells with the chemistry, or they patent the chemistry for them and they can license it to LG. So we'll see about that. But the stats and everything that Tesla released so far about the China-made Model 3s is extremely similar to everything we see on the Model 3 in the rest of the world. Though, of course, a lot of it is based on different standards and whatnot. So it's a bit weird on that sense. So yeah, LG becomes the second official, if the report from Bloomberg is correct, which seems likely, it would become the second official supplier for Tesla battery cell other than Panasonic for vehicles only. Of course, Tesla has been using other battery cells in the last few years for their energy products, including from LG and from Samsung. But for vehicles, Panasonic has always been the exclusive manufacturer of cells. With the small exception for if some cares with the Tesla Roadster 3.0 program, the short-lived battery replacement program where Tesla offered like a new battery Roadster's owner. They called it the Roadster 3.0, and they did use LG Chem cells for that battery pack. If you remember, Seth, we did a review of that back in California like three years ago at this point.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. We drove it up the coast, and it was a fun, really fun car.
Really small inside, though. Like, if you need two people in like a medium sized bag, you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah, Yeah, and then they'll the boot in the back is not barely fits a small dog inside that. All right, not that you would put a dog inside for reference.
A human.
No, you wouldn't like that. That's what I'm gonna say. Like, I was gonna make a joke about putting like a dead body inside, but you wouldn't be able to fit a dead body inside the boot of a Roadster. Hopefully, with the new Roadster. Hopefully. Tesla postponed the full self-driving price increase until V10s come out, and especially smart summons. So that was a comment from Elon Musk this week, because he was getting a lot of messages from people saying like, hey, what happened with the price increase for the full self-driving package? Which, of course, Tesla has confirmed earlier this month they plan a price increase on August 16. But it never came. So August 16 came and passed, and the price increase didn't came. And now I just realized that's kind of shitty, because Tesla used, when they announced that, they used it as an incentive for people to buy. Like, it was part of an email and incentivizing people to buy the package and everything. Like, buy it now because the price increase is going to come, and it didn't come. So, yeah, that's not great. But
this has happened a few times already.
Yeah, they do use that a lot. So the reason Elon gave is that they want to wait for version 10 and the smart summon that's going to be part of that update, along with a bunch of other stuff. So that would sort of justify the price increase to have those new features, which is something that Tesla hasn't done much in the past. I mean, like, the software update normally is just like it's a bonus. You don't have to pay for it, anything like that. You won't have to pay for some of the features for sure, though. Now with the premium connectivity package that people have to pay for the base Model 3s and stuff, well, you have to pay a yearly membership for it. There's a lot of stuff that's probably not going to be available unless you have that package. So that's another thing to take into account. I'm talking about maybe like the music streaming stuff and things like that. But Smart Summon seems to be the biggest holdup. So, of course, Elon famously said a month or two ago that the latest version, someone at the door. let me finish that thought. That someone, almost the latest version almost didn't suck. But we saw a recent demonstration test, and it still looked like it wasn't quite ready for production yet. And what Elon said this week is that it's going to come out in the next 4 to 8 weeks, which is still a big gap. And that still depends on the early access program. So it is an early access program right now, the Smart Summon, but not the other part of V10, which things that have been confirmed right now is the karaoke stuff, some music things that are not clear. Hopefully Spotify sounds like it's connected to it, but a bunch of other stuff should come too. My biggest concern with that is that, like, I feel like Smart Summon is something hard to nail down correctly, right?
It's going to be really hard. And there's a lot of, dangers.
So now the holdup is that we have to wait for all those other features that are, let's face it, probably a lot easier to bring to the fleet until Smart Summon works safely and is actually useful and not just, like, a gimmick. I'm talking about especially things like Spotify. So,
Spotify, I think, is just like a holdover, though. Isn't Tesla going to do something like Tesla Music? Like, wasn't that like kind of a done deal? Like, weren't they getting?
Yeah,
like,
we saw some early updates of that in the software, but I think that might have been put in the back burner too, because that still takes a lot of manpower, because you have to do all those deals, those streaming deals with the rights owner of the music labels and whatnot. So I think that might be like a bigger endeavor that Tesla can handle right now. Just turning up the Spotify, like, they have the app already. Granted, it's not the best. Tesla owners in Europe have been complaining about it a little bit. So if they can update that when they launch it to the US market, it would be welcome. But they're already so close to it. So but I don't want to wait for it. Like, if the hold up is just we need to have enough of new features for V10 to be like a full number upgrade, I don't really care about the full update, full number update. I just want the features.
What's kind of interesting about, well, so Spotify, a lot of people already have membership to it, and Spotify has a free level. So it's interesting to me because theoretically, if Tesla did Spotify, everybody would just put in their own, you know, username and password, and Tesla wouldn't owe anything to Spotify like they do now to, was it iHeartRadio or Slacker or whatever?
Slacker, yeah.
Yeah, so originally in Europe, save Tesla a lot of money.
Yeah, because in Europe, the Tesla came with a premium Spotify account paid for. So even if you didn't have one, they created one for you and you had premium Spotify in your car. Now, of course, you could change that. If you already had a premium, people will just use their premium because it would be connected to all their existing feature in their account and everything. But that with Tesla moving to the premium connectivity package, where they actually charge you for those more bandwidth consuming features like music streaming, it makes sense that Spotify Premium wouldn't be included into that. However, you're right, there's a free version too. You could just use a free version so people could have access to the free version. And then if they want to upgrade to Spotify Premium, then that's between them and Spotify. And I think most people do. I mean, I have a Spotify account premium forever. It's been my main way to listen to music. So yeah, we'll be waiting for that in the coming, I say weeks, but it's probably going to be months. Though, with so many people in the early access program, now we have a more easier look at the program. So we're going to keep updating you at what's happening in the update, so that we start having a better idea of when is it really going to launch. Because that 4 to 8 weeks window, it's a pretty big window. All right. The other big news this week about Tesla was regarding the Walmart situation. So earlier in the week, Walmart ended up filing a lawsuit against Tesla over a breach of contract regarding their 240-plus solar system installed at locations all around the U.S., Walmart store locations I'm talking about. So that's a deal that dates back with SolarCity, where Walmart became a big partner to SolarCity to install commercial system over the rooftop. So pretty large system. And it grew fast to, as we learn now, over 240 stores. Of course, when Tesla ended up buying SolarCity, they took over that contract. They took over the inspection responsibility, the maintenance responsibility, and also the contracts for the systems. And what we learn now from that lawsuit is that 7 of those systems caught on fires over the last few years. And Walmart has been dissatisfied with the way Tesla handled the situation, with the inspection, with the maintenance, and with reassuring them that it won't happen again. Because after 6 fires, Tesla ended up de-energizing all 240 systems, and yet there's still one system that caught on fire. So it cost Walmart millions of dollars in damages and lost merchandise and closing the stores and whatnot. In the lawsuit, they were requesting for Tesla to pay for all that damages. And on top of it, they were so fed up with the way Tesla was handling the situation that they even asked them to remove all the systems. So to de-install 240 systems, which I have to assume is in the megawatt hour of capacity, would be a big, big hit for Tesla to de-install all that. But the good news, so the lawsuit looked really bad. If you look and it looked like Walmart is accurate here in the way they describe the situation, because it includes inspection report from Tesla itself, where they acknowledge a lot of issues with their system and the way they've been installed in the first place and the way they've been maintained. But the good news is today we got a joint statement from both Tesla and Walmart, where they toned down the rhetoric a little bit, and it's more like about working together to re-energize the system now and to address the issues in the lawsuit and everything. So it sounds like it won't be the install. They're going to work toward re-energizing the system. And that makes more sense because you still have a massive capacity, solar power capacity on those roofs that you're just not using right now. So it makes sense to just fix the problem instead of just giving up on it. However, Tesla still needs to fix the issues of a fire hazard. That's also no good. But ultimately, the way I see it, after reading the lawsuit and reading the between Tesla and Walmart, they sent each other like breach of contract. Like, Tesla says that Walmart is breaching their contract by not wanting to re-energize the system and deinstalling them. And then Walmart says, no, you are breaching the contract by not offering us good maintenance inspection and whatnot. So at least right now, it looks like Tesla's probably going to have to pay for the damages, and then they're going to work together to make sure they are both okay with the status of all the systems so that they can be re-energized. Otherwise, you just have those biggest assets, like those massive energy generating asset that are not doing anything.
Yeah, it's kind of scary though. Like, why are all these things catching on fire? I mean, it sounds like there was some negligence maybe on Tesla's part. I mean, 240 stores have these, and how many fires?
Like seven.
Seems kind of like a lot. Like, I could see one or two. Like, that would be, you know, maybe like some weird thing happened. But seven seems like kind of a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And you do see some similarities with some problems that happened. And at the same time, we did learn that from Business Insiders that Tesla had a program going on since last year where they were replacing faulty parts on their solar systems all over the U.S. Regarding two specific parts, a connector and optimizer. And it's not clear if that was linked to the Walmart situation, because the program started when the fires kind of ramped up. Fires happened, like one happened in 2012, one in 2016, one in 2017, but then three in a row, like in the first half of 2018. So that's when they were like starting to freak out. And around the same time, Tesla started the program to change a bunch of connectors and optimizers on their existing solar system. So that might be related. Though one of the optimizers, Solar Edge, and Solar Edge has since denied that they had anything to do with it. Like, they're not aware that their optimizer are linked to any fires or anything like that.
Yeah, Solar Edge is kind of the industry standard. I wonder, what part Solar Edge played in the whole thing? Because I think Tesla or Solar City used Solar Edge optimizers and inverters for most of their large-scale projects. So I wonder, I mean, from the clip you posted, it sounded like some of the wiring was faulty, which wouldn't be SolarEdge's issue.
Yeah, a bunch of it had to do with installation. They traced one of the fire to an issue with the grounding. They didn't ground it properly. So, of course, that has nothing to do with the connector or an optimizer. If it's not grounded properly, you're in trouble. All right, Tesla announced today a big expansion in Eastern Europe. Poland, Hungary, Romania, and Slovenia are all getting access to ordering Tesla vehicles starting today. So those markets, I think they already had access to reserving the Model 3 from back in the days, from back when Tesla started reservation. But now you can actually order the car. It will go in production, and Tesla will have an actual delivery date for you at some point. And that also means, of course, that Tesla is going to offer official services there in those countries. Poland already had, since like a few months ago, they had the first service center in Warsaw. So we knew that it was coming for sure in Poland. Budapest also had one plan. So that's Hungary. So we knew it was coming. But now it's official, so if you can place an order right now, we assume that Tesla is going to have some service centers in the region soon. And supercharger, a bunch of those markets already had superchargers, and Tesla has a bunch of them plans. Like, you can clearly see it. Tesla is going east with the supercharger network in Europe. Those markets are not big. Like, if we're talking about like what kind of value that has on Tesla getting bigger, the Polish market is pretty big. We're talking about, and they've been growing fast too. like just a few years ago, it was like 300,000 cars a year. Now it's over 500,000 cars a year. So it's a pretty decent sized market. Of course, a lot of those cars are cheaper. Luxury market is not that big, but electric vehicle market is not that big, and Tesla could accelerate adoption there. Hungary and Romania are just over 100,000 cars each. And Slovenia is just 70,000 cars a year. So it's not; those are not massive markets.
Yeah, and it really, you know, the Model S and Model X aren't really great cars to market in those areas. But the Model 3 with its lower price, starting price, maybe makes a lot more sense for those kind of economies.
Probably why they waited too for to launch in those countries. All right. A rumor came out earlier this year about earlier this week about the Volkswagen CEO Herbert Diess saying that he was interested in investing in Tesla. VW came out real quick to say that they're denying the rumor, but we know, like, it's not the first time there's been a rumor about that. Like, when
I was going to say, didn't this exact thing happen like a year or so ago?
Well, with the taking private deal, Elon said when Elon said that he wanted to take this up private, VW was rumored as one of the companies that was interested in helping them going private. Though Elon was apparently not on board with the idea of being owned or co-owned by a German automaker. Or an automaker, but didn't, at all, really.
I feel like Volkswagen came out almost immediately and denied the rumor that time as well.
Yeah, but they denied that Volkswagen has any interest in buying Tesla. So it came out of Manager Magazine. What the Manager Magazine is that especially Diess was saying that if it was a possibility, he would jump on the stake in Tesla, especially for to try to get to some partnership to develop on the software side of things and powertrains, which would make sense. I mean, Volkswagen has been making deals with electric vehicles, like, but it was more on the other side, though. Like, if with Ford, they want to sell them the MEB platform and everything. So, yeah, it is. I'm not sure that it would be. I'm not sure on either side that it would make much sense. I mean, on Tesla's side, Tesla has money right now. The last quarter, they were sitting on, what, $5 billion? So they don't really need cash, that much cash right now. If things go as well, of course. With all the markets looks these days, you never have a too big cushion. Unless maybe you're Apple or something like that. And then it might get too big at one point. But yeah, on their side, I'm not sure like what kind of interest it sees, because if they want to do another powertrain supply deal like they had with Daimler back in the day, like they had with Toyota, they're not in the same situation right now where Tesla is all the battery capacity that Tesla is trying to deploy is for their own powertrain consumption needs, like to make their own powertrain, for making their own cars. And maybe in the long-term future, like maybe 5 years or more, and that makes sense that Tesla would become like a battery manufacturer for their other automakers or powertrain manufacturer. But right now, short-term, doesn't make much sense. All right, Mercedes-Benz is out with its all-electric minivan, the EQV. No, I don't think looks people nice. Like to call it minivan. Now they call it an MPV, multi-purpose vehicle. Like the manufacturers, they don't like the minivan term, I think.
I feel like Chrysler kind of owns that niche. Yeah, I mean they invented the minivan, sort of. And they kind of, I don't know, they kind of tout that quite a bit. So, yeah, I don't know. This kind of looks bigger than
a
typical minivan.
Yeah, it is not that mini, too. That's what I was going to say. And to Chrysler's benefit, they do have the Pacifica Hybrid, which was the first minivan that can go all electric to a certain distance. Like, of course, it was a plug-in hybrid, but still. But this thing is full electric. It has a 100 kilowatt-hour battery pack, though they limit the usable capacity to 90 kilowatt-hour. They say it's good for 405 kilometers, 250 miles, but I think that's probably the WLTP. It wasn't mentioned, but German company launching that. That's probably WNTP. So I think something closer to 200, 215 miles on a single charge, which is pretty good for what it is. I mean, though you definitely might want to do some long distance trip with that, but mostly it's like family vehicles for day-to-day driving. So it's good for that. And you do have 110 kilowatts charging capacity. So that's in the mid's capacity of what's coming out nowadays.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I mean, you would be able to fill up that 100 kilowatt and, you know, if it was optimized in close to an hour. So not bad.
Yeah, the only thing they mention, because of course you want to know like the charting of the charging, the only thing they say is 10 to 80% in less than 45 minutes. It's decent enough. You can have a bunch of different seating configuration, 7 to or 8. Is it just that? Yes. Yeah, 6 individual seat, or if you do like those kind of bench thing, you can have 7 or even 8 seater configuration. That's pretty good. And the picture that they showed, like of just as when it's individual seats, it looks like almost like a limousine type of interior that you get out of it. Very roomy inside, and it's, you can have it like two facing two. So there's no details about the pricing or the availability just yet, but they've been talking about integrating the production of the EQV into the minivan factory that they, well, just the van factory that they have in Spain in Vitoria, where they're already producing other Mercedes Benz, like the Vito and the V Class, all their van. And this would be integrated inside that. So they think they can bring it to production pretty fast. So we'll see about that.
It'd be nice if they... What's that?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
So I was going to say, on the Mercedes, it would be nice if they built a camper van version of this. I had just driven around for a week a camper van, which is diesel, and it was kind of a nightmare. But like, there's a lot of advantages to having a huge battery pack in a camper van, because you can, you know, use the lights and the water pumps and all the other stuff off the battery without having to start the car or having to plug in elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope somebody builds that.
Yeah, Nissan, the ENV 200, and they did a camper van version of that, but just for the Spanish market, apparently.
But yeah, I think they're pretty hard to get a hold of.
Yeah, it's not very available much, and it's the range is shorter too. And also the ENV 200 is notoriously just not fun to drive at all. All right, moving on to a car a little bit more fun to drive, the Chevy Bolt EV 2020, the new model year is coming out. And over the past few years, I mean, ever since they launched the car into 2016, was it? They haven't upgraded much with every model year coming out. It was like a few small features, a few new paint colors and whatnot. Now we have an actual range upgrade from 238 miles to 259 miles of range. And if know the Bolt EV...
It's coincidentally just right above the Kona. The Hyundai. The Hyundai Kona is 258. So it's kind of interesting that this is 259.
Yeah. So we learned about that through the APA. APA updated the site before GM said anything. So that's what we learned from it. So we didn't know exactly how they achieved that. My hope was, oh, a brand new battery pack. Come with other advantages, of course. But sorry about that. Today, GM did release the information, and there's not much in there. They said like a new 66 kilowatt hour battery pack, basically. The pack itself is the same. They said that they tweaked a little bit the cells to have more range out of it, more energy capacity out of it. And that's it. They're not announcing any faster charging or anything like that, which is the biggest disappointment. That's what we were looking for with the Bolt EV. Just faster charging would have been a big deal. But no, they're just going with a small range bump, and the prices stay the same. Something that starts at $37,000. And of course, now GM, like Tesla, they are seeing their federal tax credit in the U.S. just go down pretty fast. I think they're still, are they still at the 37,000 now? Or they?
I think they're at 37,500.
But they're cutting in half soon too, I think. They're cutting in half like in the next 3 months probably.
I think they're 3 months behind Tesla.
Yeah, I think, I think they started in April. I think they started at 37 in April. So they have, what, 3 months or 6 months? The first drop. 6 months?
I think it's 6 months and then another 6 months.
Something like that. Anyway, that makes it a lot harder to buy it because that car was always seen, you know, like I got a lot of crap for saying that it was a compliance car, but it's a compliance car because you wouldn't buy it without the incentive much. And now that the incentive of going down and that you have the Kona EV in play, you have the Niro EV, it becomes a lot less attractive.
And especially since those guys still have their full tax credit.
They do. And the car is a little expensive, more expensive, but that compensates for it. Bigger cargo space too. And so how much does this update helps? Personally, here's the thing though. I do like the fact that the Kona EV is faster charging, but it's not that much faster charging. It's not, in my opinion, faster charging enough to even enable long distance travel. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I have a Chevy Bolt. We do a trip to Vermont in it in the summertime, but it gets 230 miles. But when you get to a fast charger or an EVgo 50 kilowatt, which are the predominant chargers around, it doesn't even get to 50 kilowatt. It's 30 or 40 kilowatts. So you're looking at least an hour to get near 80%. And, it sounds like that's not changing much with the new ones, which is frustrating because, of all the things of the Chevy Bolt that I disliked, the range was kind of low on my list. I'd much rather have faster charging, better seats, front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive, better tires.
Well,
I can go on.
Now you're making a long list.
Right.
Well, yeah,
but I'm just saying, the range is always pretty good.
A lot of people have been saying that they get a much higher range than EPA, right? I've seen a bunch of people saying they get 300 miles already on their existing ones without hypermiling it too much, like just driving kind of normal.
Yeah, it's also interesting. They got 10% more range. So they went from 60 to 66 kilowatt hours. That's a pretty big thing just for tweaking the batteries.
Tweaking the cells, yeah.
Yeah, the cells. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. But it also underscores that GM is really, really not doing a lot of work on the Bolt. They knew the seats were bad in 2016 and you're getting pretty much the same seats nowadays. And they know that if they could have made that a little bit bigger and made it an SUV or a CUV, they would have hit a different market entirely, especially with all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. And a little bit more power if they would have, put two, 150 kilowatt motors in that car, it would just be a screamer. They haven't touched it. So that's frustrating.
It would be good for margin too. You make it like a 3,000 something option on the car or something like that. And a bunch of people would buy it. It's still not a super expensive car. If all-wheel drive option would start at 40,000 before incentive. Bunch of people went with that.
Yeah,
sure. And so that new powertrain. The thing too is that my understanding why they don't modify it too much is because of the LG thing, because of the fact that LG is so much involved in producing so many parts relating to the powertrain of the car, relating to the car in general, that GM has to make them be open to change those parts and adapt them to a new powertrain or anything like that, a new drive unit or something. So I think that's a big part of the issue. Now, you just mentioned the CUV. We know that the Bolt EUV is coming. And we think we even saw it with the Chinese version coming out. but it's coming out on the Chinese powertrain, and we think in the US it's going to come out on the Bolt EV powertrain. However, we thought it was going to be with a significant upgrade to the powertrain. Now it looks like this is it. This is the upgrade. So a 66 kilowatt hour battery pack, a little bit longer range. Of course, the bigger EUV is probably going to have a range cut. So that's probably so good for that, at least, where maybe the EUV is going to get a similar range as the current Bolt EV with the bigger format and bigger battery pack. But it won't get any faster charging based on this.
Yeah, I mean, I would have also liked to see more speed out of it. I feel like it's already pretty fast, but even a little bit more speed would have been fun. And doesn't sound like that's in the cards either.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to the Porsche Taycan. The last few weeks we were pointing about how much Porsche has been pushing this idea that, oh, the big differentiating factor with our performance electric car and others electric performance electric car, which basically means Tesla, is that we have repeated power capacity, high power capacity. The thing they did last week, though, or week before that, that was 2 weeks ago, we talked about it on the podcast, the consecutive launch and everything. We were a bit skeptical about, like, really how much it compares to Tesla. Like, you need much better data to have a look at it. Now they came out with a different metric this week, which I like a lot more. It is distance driven at high speed over 24 hours. So they drive the car, they deplete the battery pack, they stop, they charge it, they go again, they deplete, they go again for 24 hours nonstop. And they did with the Taycan prototype 3,425 kilometers. That's 2,128 miles over a 24-hour period. So is it impressive? Is it not impressive? I like that metric. I think more automakers should use the same metric, like, as a comparison point from now on to show, like, because it's good on two things. It's good to show endurance, but it's also good to show range and charging capacity, because it does both. So within those 24 hours, you need to manage charging. So if you can charge faster, you're gonna get more a higher number on that 24-hour metric. So that's part of it. And of course, with the 250 kilowatt charging capacity of the Porsche Taycan, they were able to improve on that with it. But they also drove fast. They drove 195 to 215 kilometers an hour. That's 120 to 134 miles per hour. So the only comparison point that we have, the best one that we have, is with the Tesla Model 3 long range. Bjorn, YouTuber, well-known YouTuber, Bjorn did it on a Model 3 long range, 2,781 kilometers. That's 1,728 miles. So significant difference. However, not a perfect test because two things. It was on public roads. Porsche did it on a track. So a lot easier on a track. So that might account for, let's say, like a 10% difference or something. And then Model 3 also didn't have access to full charging capacity. I think they were limited to something like less than 200 kilowatts compared to the actual full charging capacity of the Model 3, which is 250 now. But that's on supercharger stations, V3, which are not in Europe there. The test was made in Europe. And third-party ones. Have we seen the a Model 3 trying to charge with the new CCS adapter on? No, you don't need a CCS adapter because you have a CCS plug on the Model 3, but on a CCS station?
I think that one Dutch company did it.
You lagged for a second. Were you saying anything?
So that Dutch company that has the European charging stations all over the place. They had, but I feel like that was before. What's that?
Fastned?
Yeah, Fastned. But this was before I think this was right after the update. And it was like 200 kilowatts.
Yeah.
Didn't they do it?
I think it's something similar that they did. Yeah. I think it was something similar for that test. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you look at that timing, they were going, they went 2,100 miles in 24 hours. So that's about, you know, 80 miles per hour average, 90 miles per hour.
It's 142 kilometers, 88 miles on average.
So, you know, if they were going 100 miles per hour and then they had to charge, you know, a small portion, I kind of feel like a Model 3 could do that. Like, it's not, like a Model 3 even, a Model 3 on the Autobahn has problems, you know, at 150 miles per hour for a long period of time. But I feel like at 100 miles per hour, it's not a huge issue for the Model 3.
They went to 120, between 121 and 134.
Miles per hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would probably be kind of close to where the Model 3 would start having issues.
Bjorn, when he did this test...
He was on the Autobahn, right?
Yeah, he used the Autobahn, so he was also driving fast, but not as fast. He was driving an average speed of 115 kilometers an hour at 72 miles per hour, so it's not that fast.
Yeah, I remember like some of his video. He was like braking and stuff for, you know, trucks and the left lane and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, so that affected his speed too. But
yeah, I don't think that the Model 3 would be that far behind.
Yeah, I don't think it would be that far too. Yeah, but I do like the ideas. I mean, as a new metric to catch, because it does encompass the endurance of the car, sure, but it also involves the range and it involves charging and all everything together. So if you would have like one track where you could do that and it has all the charging capacity, like full charging capacity that any car if you can go up all 350 and you can charge all car, you can test them all on that and get that metric for every car.
Yeah, the actual vehicle publication
site should do that. We just need, all right, guys, we'll start
a batch just for that.
We'll start a batch just for that so we can build a racetrack to do that, like with every car that we have that we review.
And we also need a bunch of drivers.
Yeah, because they did it with three, I think, drivers. Yeah, you cannot do that alone for sure.
That can't be fun.
No. All right, staying on the Taycan this week, because looks like Porsche is like ramping up, trying to create some hype ahead of the unveiling, which is just less than two weeks now, I think. It's September 4, the unveiling. They announced that they did a partnership with Apple to offer Apple Music streaming directly inside the cars, much like Tesla is with Spotify and Slacker. Porsche would be with Apple. I'm not a big. I've used Apple Music for like a month. Like I got the free trial, and then I'm okay with Spotify and use it. Are you an Apple Music user?
No, strangely, I use Google Music. I got in Google Music, which is YouTube. I got in at the beginning, so I get it for $7.99 a month, and it works on all my devices. So I still have stuck with it. I like the YouTube Red and all the other like stuff I get with it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm sure it's a decent enough service that the Porsche owner is going to be happy with. But it's not even why we want to report on that. Is when they did that, they did release the first image of the interior of the Porsche Taycan at the same time. Very like it was purposely made to not reveal too much. But we didn't have to wait a long time because last night they did. Yesterday they did unveil a bunch of other images revealing the most of the interior of the car. You see everything except for the seats, but you see the entire dashboard, the steering wheel, the instrument cluster, the center console, everything like that. Surprisingly, pretty close to the Mission E, where you have like the instrument cluster screen, then you have the screen that goes from the dash all the way to the passenger side, and then that big touch screen on the center console that has it is vertical like Model S. It doesn't go as high though, but it has a way bigger angle on it, so you can see it's meant to be a touchscreen. It's not meant to like show too much information. And sure enough, they did release some information about it. So that's particular center console screen is for seat configurations. You also have access to music and phone, like you can answer the phone from it. You have the climate control on it. for the screen that goes all over the dash, it's actually an optional that you have the passenger side. So it is two separate screen, really. It almost looks like a full screen, which does look cool, but that's an option. So there's this side on the passenger, that's completely an option. And it look like we don't have that much information on that now, but if you look at the images, it looks weird because they put like the navigation stuff on it than the music stuff. But navigation is definitely more for the driver. I think we all agree on that. And it's like just way too far to be useful for the driver. So it's as if like your passenger is really your co-pilot and needs the navigation information right in front of them. But in terms of like all looks, the design, I think it looks very sleek. It looks really the Tesla interior ruined me for any other kind of interior. Now, especially the premium car that I come up with, just too crowded, too many buttons everywhere, too many controls, too much time to understand everything, how everything works, not very intuitive. This one's you have to look hard to find any button on it. It looks like they went like full on touchscreen stuff, and so everything's gonna be probably programmable. Hopefully, no, they did confirm over the air software update, so it's gonna be updatable too. So that's good.
Yeah, I think the only buttons really are on the steering wheel, which you know Tesla also does.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
And I think, is there five screens?
Well, if you count the instrument cluster at one screen, and then the dashboard screen, then the optional passenger dashboard screen, so that's three, and then four screen with the center console. I think that's four screens.
Okay. It's a lot of screens.
Oh, excuse me, you might be right. I think there's also an optional instrument cluster screen where you have like the main one, and then you can have side ones. Is that right?
I think so. Because I read somewhere there's five screens.
Yeah. I think
that's a lot of screens.
Yeah, you can expand the instrument cluster screen where it can get bigger than that. But the images, of course, it's like fully equipped, so you have everything on it.
So I agree with you. I think they did a really good job on this, you know, as far as we can tell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know though, like if this layout's gonna be something that is going to age well. Like it seems like Tesla always, like in terms of interiors, is thinking way ahead of the game. You know, like where are you going to watch movies when this thing is driving itself, for instance, or where are you going to, you know, like where is your video screen or those kind of things. It seems like a good interior for now, but it also seems a little bit legacy to me.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, but I think it's pretty. Like we need to try it. Of course, we need to sit inside of it. Though that doesn't look like Porsche is really willing to let us do that. We're having some issues with Porsche and letting us getting anything close to this car. Even though we've been very positive about it, but. If they can also make it like intuitive and everything, remember that the interior designer of the Mission E was hired by Tesla for the interior design of their cars. So Tesla definitely saw something that they liked about it.
Yeah, I guess maybe they like screens.
A lot of screens. Yeah, they do. Yeah, well, they do one big one now that they like. They don't like multiple one, but shit, fair enough. So, yeah, that was a bunch of taken news this week. Porsche is definitely trying to hype things up ahead of the unveiling next week, which, unfortunately, we won't be able to attend because, again, Porsche is not on board with the electric train. You know, I don't know.
That's weird. If anybody out there knows somebody at Porsche and wants to put in a good word, I'm actually going to be in Berlin, so maybe I'll sneak in or get invited by one of the other people that Porsche did invite.
We're
not definitely
like preferential we're not looking for preferential treatment or anything like that. We even gonna have someone on the spot in Berlin, so don't need to like travel costs or anything like that. I'm in Canada. There's one in Canada. I'll go to that. I can go to this one too. But Porsche is like, no, it's full. We didn't invite you. iTrek is not important enough. All right.
Biggest electric vehicle website in the world.
Yeah, by a wide margin. That's what I tell them too. Like, maybe you're not like on board with the electric vehicle focus publication, but we're even bigger than a lot of traditional like motoring publication too.
Yeah, we're bigger than Motor Trend.
You know, the website for sure. Yeah, maybe not the magazine, but
yeah.
Do people really read the magazine?
I don't know. Doctor's offices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's our little rant about Porsche. We still love you, Porsche. We still love that car. I mean, it looks awesome. I'm excited about it. Excited about the fact that also they are more aggressive about their EV adoption plan. I mean, last thing I heard is like they think 50% of their car sales in 2025, which I still think is low, but it's more aggressive than any other established automakers. So good on them for that.
Yeah, and Porsche's had some electrification for quite a bit of time. Like even the 918 Spyder and all those other ones had electric. You know, they were hybrids, but they were even plug-ins, though.
Yeah. They saw the potential for electric at the high performance level early on. They just didn't see them convincing their regular customers to go there. And they still are not completely on board to like. I've heard a bunch of comments about the 911, like almost saying that 911 could never be electric. Like, yeah, come on. If you look at the patch, and I get it, why? Because they want the 911 to be like lighter a little bit, and also a lot of people like it to be manual and whatnot. But if you look at the path of the energy density of batteries, there's going to be a time soon where you're going to get like a pretty light battery. I've just saw. SF Motors. I was looking into it to see just how serious it is yet. I've sent it to a bunch of my battery people to see, but I haven't heard back yet. But they just announced a 432 watt-hour per kilogram energy density on their latest solid-state battery cell prototypes. So that's pretty damn good. That's like 30% better than Tesla's probably. So you're talking about something like let me do some quick maths here.
It's not quite airplane level yet.
A what level?
Airplane.
No, maybe. Well, pretty close though. If you have like a 75 kilowatt battery pack, you divide them by 432. So that's 173 kilogram of cell in a 75 kilowatt battery pack. Had the battery pack components, let's say 225 to 30, like between 225 and 250 kilograms battery pack for a 75 kilowatt battery pack. That's on the bigger Model 3, long range Model 3. What's a kilogram in pounds?
That's 2.2.
So like something like just over 500, like 500, 600. Pound pack, I think most
that's
of the
that's like three humans.
Three that's three humans. But if you want a little more easier comparison, that's about half of what like most packs are today. So yeah, I mean it's exciting, really exciting on that front. Of course, that's not in production yet, and it's solid state. People are saying that some are saying like 2020, others are saying like it's never going to happen in solid states, but there's going to be improvement on that front for sure. So there's something to be excited about. And I know for a fact that the 911 is going to be electrified, fully electrified at some point, and sooner than we think, sort of sooner than Porsche thing, probably. All right. That's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching our YouTube. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.